Hi, this is Michael Sowers from the Princeton Tigers, and you're listening to the Deep Flying Dixie podcast on Inside Lacrosse.
Podcast studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst and my Howard County homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it! How was your Easter Sunday that you hosted at your house?
Good weekend. Saturday was up at Rutgers, did the Michigan-Rutgers game. Rutgers won that game by, I think they won it by two. So they stayed in the thick of things and really, for all intents and purposes, have clinched a spot in the Big Ten tournament based on the goal differential, even if they lose this weekend at Penn State. And then Sunday had family over. It was a lot of fun. The flank steak was succulent and delicious and a huge hit. And it was a lot of fun. We really, really enjoyed ourselves. Good to see my in-laws and my parents, my brother and his family. And we had a really good time.
Same here. I got to see a lot of my family, a lot of my friends. It was a cool weekend and a great way to refresh and restart, get excited for the spring and the final week of the regular season, and in some cases even conference tournaments like in the ACC.
Well, let's talk lacrosse.
Let's talk some lacrosse. So there's a lot of tiebreaker scenarios that have come into a clearer picture this week especially, and on InsideLacrosse.com there are several of those tiebreakers. I will lay those out within our preview article and with links to the different tiebreaking scenarios. So if you're confused, you can use that as a reference guide throughout the weekend. Come back to the article that Dixie writes that I sort of produce and help put together for him. But check that out. That's where you'll find all the tie-breaking scenarios.
So shout out InsideLacrosse.com. You guys do a heck of a job with all the bracketology, tie-breakers, and that's a great source of information. I'll second your emotions.
You know, it's funny. It seems like there's other people in the sport who often rely on us as well. And I won't name names, but it's just funny that people are like, well, you guys don't know what the tiebreakers are? And, so they kind of wait for our reporting or use us to collect all the information that it's always fun to see. So our first featured game in the CAA, number 20, Delaware. It's 3-1 in the league. We'll travel to UMass to play the number 15, Minutemen, who is also 3-1. This is for first place in the CAA. This is Friday at 5 p.m.
Yeah, and the tournament field is set for the CAA. We know who the four teams are going to be. It's going to be Delaware, Towson, UMass, and Drexel. Just don't know the seeding, and, of course, the number one seed hosts. So if Delaware wins and Towson loses, Delaware's number one, they'll host. If UMass and Towson both win, the Minutemen are number one, and they will host. Should Delaware and Towson both win, the Tigers will host. So there's three different scenarios in play to where we have a number one seed in the host. But this game, Delaware at UMass, the Blue Hens suffered their first conference loss a week ago to Towson. And it was what I would call a sandwich game. Good in the beginning, wasn't good in the middle, but was really good on the end. Sort of those layers. They got off to a 5-2 lead. Then they scored five of the last six goals. But in between there, Towson scored 11 out of 13 and went on an 11-2 run. So, you know, Delaware's a team I've been impressed with all year. I thought Towson did a really good job of getting to their good goaltender, DeLuca, in that game. Matt DeLuca, he struggled against Towson, really struggled for the first time this season. And then you got the UMass Minutemen who stumbled against Hofstra, but they've been buttoned up ever since. And Sean Scannone continues to be terrific.
He's been great.
He stopped 21 shots. against Fairfield. So UMass beat Fairfield 17-8 last weekend. It's going to own 21 saves, which is wow. Insane. This is a really good lacrosse team. They're really good. I think right now UMass is the best team in the CAA, but it's all about, we talk about it week in, week out, what's in front of you. All you can do if you're Towson, Delaware, UMass is win and then take care of yourselves. And then if you need help, hopefully you get a little bit of help. But if you control your own destiny, then that's the way to go. So the CAA definitely proving to be a very good conference in terms of the competitiveness, as it always typically is.
Our next featured game is University of Richmond. It's 8-5, 5-1 in the SoCon. We'll travel to number 12 High Point for a battle royale in the SoCon Saturday at noon.
Yeah, another game with huge implications and seemingly a matchup that everybody's waiting all year. Don't count out Air Force. I mean, the Air Force Falcons are also 5-1 in the SoCon.
Yeah, they're quietly put together a really nice season.
And you got to give them a lot of credit coming off of the year where they were on probation last season. Eric Saramet was not coaching the team last year, was not retained after that suspension. He's now the offensive coordinator up at Rutgers. So Bill Wilson has done a nice job with the Falcons. But here's the deal. High Point wins. They'll secure the number one seed, host the conference tournament. If High Point loses and Air Force wins, Air Force will be the number one seed. They did beat Richmond earlier this season. And if Richmond wins and Air Force loses, then Richmond is your number one seed. So a lot at stake this coming Saturday. High Point, again, it's right in front of them. They win. They host the conference tournament. Panthers been living a little bit dangerously late. They're on a four-game win streak, but their last two wins over Mercer and Bellarmine, both on the road, were only by a goal. So the good news is they're winning, and that's what you need to do at this stage of the season. The bad news is maybe on paper those teams didn't need to be as competitive as they were, but still, Asher Nolten, Chris Young, great scoring tandem. This is a High Point team that do they have – we talked about them last week, Dan. Do they have enough juice if they don't win the AQ to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large? At first glance, the Duke win, the Virginia win, you would say, yeah, sure. But we know other factors go into this. Richmond's a team, beat Notre Dame earlier in the season. They've lost to Mount St. Mary's. They've had a good run in the SoCon. Again, their only game that they've lost is to Air Force. But I do believe it is AQ or bust for the Richmond Spiders. I think the team that's going to benefit the most if Notre Dame can excel and win the ACC is going to be Ohio State. I think that's the team that's going to benefit the most from the Irish success versus Richmond. So I think Richmond has to win the AQ in the SoCon to go to the NCAA tournament. So really good game on tap. And I tell you what, I think that this conference has grown by leaps and bounds. Jacksonville sitting at 4-2. Then you got those three teams, 5-1. I think the top four of this conference has really increased the level of play, up the level of play in the SoCon. So I think the groundwork has been laid for this conference really to kind of take off and move up the ranks of the pecking order of the conferences as we see them today.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Coach Dan Shamati of Richmond earlier this week, and we talked about that exactly, how the national presence of the SoCon, how it's emerging and rising. And here's what he had to say about that and many other things.
We're joined on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast by Richmond head coach Dan Shamati. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coach, you got a big game this week. You're playing High Point. But I want to back up and start with, as a new program, relatively, you're in your sixth year. In 5 years, you've played for the conference championship every year. In five times. You've been in the NCAA tournament twice, and you produce a pair of first-team All-Americans. That would be good for most coaches at most programs and pretty incredible for a young program like yours. For people who might not know that much about Richmond lacrosse, what would you say are some of the elements or the support that you've gotten from the university that have helped you build such a strong foundation for your program?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have seen support within the institution. We've seen support from the community, you know, the lacrosse, the sport of lacrosse is obviously booming, you know, all around the country. But I do think that that the town of Richmond is you know, a rising an area that's rising very quickly. You know, so the community support, you know, has been very much behind us. You know, I love the attendance we get at home games, and you know, the amount of, you know, youth that that come out to the games. Institutionally, you know, we've got great facilities, you know, and I think the kind of relative success that we had, you know, in the first few years of being a program, really led to just increased support, you know, for our program. You know, when you look at the school as a whole and everything that it stands for, and you look around the Division I landscape and you see some of the schools that are pretty successful, there are a lot of similarities, you know, to be honest with you. And when I first looked at this opportunity, you know, back in the fall of 2012, it was the perfect fit. You know, there are so many, you know, like-minded schools academically and just culturally that, you know, again, those programs were flourishing, you know, at the Division I level. So I felt like, you know, just kind of a matter of time until, you know, hopefully we're able to, you know, to be able to do the same thing. And I'd like to think, you know, that we're on our way, you know, to doing some of those things.
Great segue for my next question. You know, in your sixth year, Richmond's really a model program for a new startup program at any Division I school. When you took the job, I'm sure you had a five-year vision, and I'd imagine you checked off a lot of those goals. So as you move into the next phase in year six, what's next? What are the next steps for Richmond lacrosse program?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. You know, the way we're kind of, you know, the infrastructure that we've created, you know, we'd like to keep that relatively consistent, I would say. And by that, I mean just, you know, the way we recruit, you know, the way that we develop our guys on and off the field. You know, we'd certainly like to keep all that the same. But, you know, we are excited that, you know, first few years of recruiting, you know, we were pretty much selling, you know, or trying to sell recruits on a vision. And, you know, now we get to, you know, talk more about, you know, things we've accomplished and, you know, the direction of the program and so on and so forth. So, you know, to be able to do, you know, what we've been able to do in the first 2 years, you know, first 5 years, you know, with just kind of just saying, hey, this is what we hope the program looks like, you know, you want to come here, you know, I get excited about, you know, what this program could look like in the next 5 years after, you know, being able to really, you know, show them some things and talk about some things tangibly, you know, that we've been able to do. But so that's the, you know, just kind of in my mind, you know, and, you know, when we do talk to some recruits, some of the things that, you know, we discuss.
Well, let's talk about your team a little bit. Your offense is led by senior Teddy Hatfield and sophomore Ryan Lanchberry, who are both top 20 in the nation in points per game. What else has been the key to your offense and making that thing work so well?
Yeah, I think our guys have learned that, you know, everybody's learned kind of what their role is. And the offense is you know, kind of, you know, an equal opportunity offense, mm-hmm. you know, but there are certain guys we want, you know, shooting the ball. There are certain things, you know, we're trying to accomplish out there. But, you know, Teddy and Ryan, you know, I do think they have a great supporting cast as well. You know, when you look at a guy like Mitch Savoca and how much he does for us, he might not have the same energy as those guys because he's playing, you know, out of the midfield. But, you know, certainly, you know, those guys wouldn't be as successful as they are without him. And, you know, Tate Gallagher is as well. And you know, the list right. goes on. I think we've got, you know, some guys who just, like I said, you know, their role might be, you know, create offense, draw slide, you know, and get the ball to one of those guys, you know, to make the decisions or to finish the play kind of thing. And again, some of those guys might not be dominating the stat sheet, you know, but they're plenty effective out there. And, you know, I guess if I'm summing all that up, it probably has a lot to do with just the unselfish nature, the way that the guys play and the way that they share the ball.
Well, let's talk about your senior star, Teddy Hatfield, for a second. He'll graduate later this spring and leave Richmond as the program's all-time leader in goals, assists, and points. He leaves with a 12-person senior class that won the SoCon championship last year, vying for it again this year. What has Teddy specifically meant to your young program as well as the senior class as a whole?
Yeah, Teddy is he was born a winner. He understands, you know, tangibly and intangibly, you know, what goes into winning. You know, he's a tremendous competitor. You know, he's a better competitor, you know, than he is an athlete. And he's not a bad athlete by any means, but, you know, he hates to lose. You know, he prepares himself, you know, mentally and physically, you know, for the grind and not just for game day, but for practice as well. You know, he's certainly a leader for us on and off the field. You know, there have been times in games, you know, teams will, you know, call timeout or between quarters, you know, they'll go offense and defensive huddle. And, you know, there's times I've looked at the offense and I just said, you know, you guys will have Teddy, you know, and I'll go sit in on the defensive huddle. You know, just that's how much trust we have in him and in the way that, you know, he's going to lead his teammates, you know, out there on game day. So he does an awful lot for us. And, you know, he's a model, you know, student athlete, you know.
On the other end of the field, sophomore Jason Reynolds has been a stud for you alongside Sean Menges, Jack Cook, and Ray Baran. How have those guys gelled over the season and what kind of presence do they bring to your defense?
Yeah, good question. You know, our defense, you know, I think is much improved from a year ago. You know, we had some young guys out there a year ago, and, you know, Jay and Sean, you know, they're like the, you know, they make that end of the field go. I mean, you know, they both have, you know, the toughest matchups, you know, game in and game out, you know, Sean being the long stick midi and Jay being the close guy. And both those guys will have, you know, a heck of an assignment, you know, this Saturday, no doubt about it. You know, they are also just, you know, they're tremendous competitors. You know, Sean Menges has a motor that, you know, that I've never seen. I mean, he just, you know, he never stops. You know, he's an animal in the weight room. He's an animal in practice. You know, he probably rubs some guys the wrong way in practice sometimes because, you know, he just refuses to take a play off. And he's just a tremendous, tremendous competitor. And he only knows one speed. So, you know, we love him for that. And, you know, he's been, you know, a tremendous, he's made a great leap from his sophomore to his junior season for us. And Jason, you know, Jason's very, very talented, you know, close defenseman, and, you know, really makes us go each and every possession down there as well. You know, he's really strong. You know, he might be, you know, short, but he is very strong, very good feet, you know, and he's pretty relentless himself, you know, down there on that end of the field. So those guys are doing a great job leading us. You know, Ray Baran, you know, redshirt freshman, you know, I think is playing his best lacrosse right now. And actually, you know, Rob Shada, you know, who started for us last year, but is coming off, you know, he had some hip surgeries this fall and, you know, is coming back into, you know, form. He just, you know, he brings some experience to that end of the field. So, yeah, I think that group is coming together, you know, nicely and, you know, really starting to complement each other in terms of skill set and strength.
Well, let's look at your game this Saturday. You play a High Point team that's ranked number 12 in the national poll. Your Spiders have won four straight against them. What are going to be the keys for your team to shut down a high-powered Panthers offense and get the victory again?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure I, you know, yet have the answer to that. You know, High Point has one of the best player. High Point is the best player in our conference and one of the best players in the country, you know, in Asher Nulting. He's obviously, you know, very, very talented, you know, and such a skilled player, such a smart player, you know, good, strong, athletic player. You know, he's going to be tough to stop. He's obviously the guy who, you know, who makes them go on that end of the field. And, you know, I think he's got a great supporting cast, as well. So, you know, we've got to, I think, you know, throughout the course of the year, you start to learn a lot about, you know, your own team and you know, what things, you know, are like the, you know, biggest ingredients, you know, when it comes to, you know, a recipe for success. And we have to focus, you know, more on those, you know, than our opponent. I would say, obviously, you know, easier said than done, you know, when you're, you know, watching these guys on film and you just, you know, see the level of talent, you know, that they have and the level of confidence that they have. So, you know, we're just going to try and, you know, stick to the things that allow us to be successful. And, you know, if we execute those things, you know, properly, then, you know, we'll give ourselves a chance, but, you know, by no means is it going to be easy. And, you know, we have a lot of respect for those guys. You know, they play really hard and they're very, very talented and well-coached. So, so certainly by no means is anything that we've done in the past, you know, going to mean, you know, squat, you know, on Saturday.
Face-offs have been a bit of concern for you all year. You know, what have you been doing to sort of even out a possession disadvantage you might have, and what's your plans moving forward to get the ball in the hands of guys like Lanchberry and Hatfield?
You know, that is the million-dollar question. We've, we've tried everything. You know, we've been trying to, you know, perfect, you know, each of our face-off guys' stances, you know, and we prepare those guys every week, you know, the same way, you know, whether we're, you know, 60% the week before or, you know, 25% the week before. And, you know, for us is, the limited success that we've had in that department, you know, I give our guys a lot of credit still. They're still working hard every day.
Sure.
And they know that that's a glaring statistic, you know, for us at times. And, you know, they show up every day and they're focused on their craft. Certainly, you know, mixing, you know, a pole in there now and then is, you know, that's something, you know, we did a little bit on Saturday, and that's going to be no secret. You know, we might throw out there on, you know, this Saturday as well, just to kind of change things up. And, you know, when you got a guy like Sean Mingus and you're, you know, putting him out there again because of the motor that he has, you know, you can just kind of, you know, relax a little bit that, you know, he might just not make it so easy, you know, for the opponent. But, you know, Davis St. Pierre, he's really tough. He's really strong. He's very good at what he does. He's, you know, in like the high 50s in terms of, you know, percentage wise. So, you know, we're going to have a hell of a time, you know, competing with him, and he's competitive too. You watch him play. He just plays so tough, as well. So we got our hands full there. We just got to, again, you know, stick to what we do and, you know, see if we can have, you know, any sort of success, you know, in that area. But I guess we'll find out on Saturday.
Right. And when I talked about the SoCon in general, you know, High Point, we just talked about them. They have a couple of, you know, almost top five wins. Your program has routinely knocked off ACC type of teams in your tenure at Richmond. Air Force has quietly put together a really nice season. And all three of you are 5-1 in the SoCon. But, you know, on a national level, you know, you guys are getting votes every week in the top 20 poll. And High Point's been ranked pretty much all season. I'm not even sure what my question is here, but the SoCon is definitely rising, and there's an emergence of it on a national level to the point where, you know, soon, I don't know if this, you're going to be like a multi-bid league. Is there a collective sort of camaraderie amongst the SoCon coaches? Because a lot of the programs are pretty young or have new coaches in their positions. Can you talk at all about the strength of the league?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would like to think that, and I think, you know, a lot of coaches would agree with this. You know, I don't think our league gets enough credit, to be honest with you. And I understand, you know, there's a lot of blue bloods out there, and, you know, the Big Ten, the ACC, you know, those schools, they draw a lot of attention, no doubt. You know, the Ivy League has been around forever and has, you know, super quality teams. The Patriot League is really, really competitive, and, you know, you don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, there's obviously a lot of good teams out there, and everybody wants to be relevant in the Division I landscape, and that's, you know, nobody in the SoCon is just happy being part of Division I. You know, we want to be relevant as well, and you know, there's a lot of good players out there, and you know, you've got hardworking, you know, head coaches and assistant coaches, you know, who are, you know, turning over, you know, every stone they can find, you know, for good players. And you know, all these schools are you know, they have a lot to offer, you know, so including just, you know, a lot of our sport is played, you know, in the month of February and in March, you know, when it can be, you know, really cold. And, you know, when you're playing that, you know, down south, you know, it's a lot different. So, so I think, you know, just, you know, there's some really ambitious, you know, coaches, both head and assistant coaches, you know, in the SoCon. There's, and you combine that with some coaches that are really experienced, you know, as well. So, whereas, you know, some of our programs might be young, I think that some of these programs are very, you know, dangerous as well. And, you know, like I said, you know, we all want to be relevant. I do think there's a collective camaraderie to just, you know, show that, you know, the Division I world that, you know, hey, you know, don't sleep on us,
yeah.
You know, or, you know, but, again, there's a lot of great teams out there, you know, and a lot of, you know, great leagues. And, you know, with the, you know, the competitiveness, you know, of the teams in the SoCon, I mean, that's just going to continue to rise. It's going to continue to force, you know, the other programs, you know, to really just, you know, rise up and stay competitive. You know, if there was one team dominating the league, you know, it'd be easy to relax, but, you know, got a lot of, you know, a lot of teams out there, you know, that are pushing each other, you know, both on, you know, whether it's practice or recruiting or you name it. So facilities, you name it. So,
right.
So, yeah.
All right. Last question for you. On the summer recruiting circuit, coaches are known to get some exercise and play some pickup basketball games. I was talking to Notre Dame's Jerry Byrne, Colgate's Matt Carwick back in December, and they told me that you are the best player on the recruiting circuit. What do you have to say about that? And then what would you say are the strengths of your game?
Well, they, if this was 10 years ago, I might agree.
It was unanimous. You know, I said, who's the best player there? Dan Chiamatti.
I would say that, you know, my game has developed a lot over the years, you know, like a lot of players who, you know, like over 10 years, you know, 10 years ago might've been a little bit more athletic and now a little bit more cerebral, you know? No, that's nice of them to say. In all honesty, basketball might be my favorite sport, you know, and lacrosse might be number two. I grew up in a basketball house. My dad, you know, coached high school basketball, you know, for a long, long time, you know, so I grew up going to practice, you know, and kind of grew up in the gym, you know, with him and my brother. And, you know, my brother was taller than I was and, you know, better shooter. So, you know, he actually, you know, played, you know, Division I college basketball. So it's just been a part of my, you know, my childhood. And I do enjoy, and can't turn down, as many coaches know, including my assistant coaches, I cannot turn down a basketball game. But it's just a lot of fun, you know, and in all honesty, you know, developed a lot of friendships in this profession, you know, just by between sessions in the summer recruiting circuit, just playing some pickup, you know, you meet a lot of people and, you know, a lot of really, you know, quality people. So I would say that the strength of my game is just my excitement to play the game, you know, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's not the way to describe it.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
I know you're a Duke guy, and that's my favorite basketball team. So in your era, are you like a Jason Williams? Are you a Mike Dunleavy, Battier? Like would you compare your game to the most from that?
Who would I compare my game to? I compare it to, you know, some guys that you've never heard of, you know, who probably sat the bench, you know, for those guys. Maybe Steve Wojciechowski.
Oh, all right. Okay.
You know,
sure.
So, you know, more hustle, you know, than anything else, you know. So,
all right.
You know, I was lucky enough to be there when guys like Jason Williams and Mike Dunleavy and Shane Battier were there, and they had, you know, hell of a team. you know, over those few years. They won the national championship in 2001, which was my junior year. I remember that, you know, pretty vividly. And yeah, but that's who I would, you know, that's who I would compare my game to in terms of anybody who you've ever heard of.
Hey, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you and your team at High Point this Saturday and in the postseason.
Thanks, Dan. Really appreciate it. Have a good day.
Just to put a button on that conversation about the High Point Panthers and the Richmond game, High Point's been giving up a lot of goals lately, 31 goals in their last two games, and I think Troutner is due. He's due for a big game. He's back at home. And also, to clarify a point, High Point is hosting the conference tournament no matter what. It's a sort of a predetermined neutral site, and it will be at High Point. But getting back into North Carolina, I think Troutner is going to be really good this weekend.
I agree. They've been giving up a ton of goals lately. They've only scored, they've scored in double digits every game this season, with one exception. And that was a loss to St. John's at High Point, 10-9 back earlier in the season. So that offense is double digit city, except for one game. So, the Panthers, I think the Panthers are the team to beat in the SoCon, but you got to go out and you got to play the games, and we'll see what happens.
Moving on to the ACC semifinal with the 2-3 seeds, features two teams that High Point and Richmond both knocked off this year. It's number 11 Notre Dame versus number 3 Duke. That'll be Saturday at 4:30 in the second ACC semifinal on ESPNU.
So get this, okay? These two teams have played each other now 7 times over the last 4 years. And
that's
history is repeating itself. They played in the regular season. They will play once again in the ACC tournament. Trivia question. I put this as we did. We featured this Duke Notre Dame game a couple weeks ago. What's the trend in this series? If you win in the regular season, what happens in the ACC tournament?
I believe the team that lost in the regular season wins the playoff game. Correct?
Bingo. So should we just should we say Notre Dame's the winner and just go home?
I think so.
Call it a day.
Let's make it easy.
No. Coach Stanowski and his crew is not going to be happy with that decision, but no, that's the trend. The winner in the regular season game loses in the ACC tournament. And right now, over the last, let's take the last 3 years, 3-3, even 500. Now Duke, 7 meetings in the last 4 years, they're 4-3. Will it be 4-4 after Saturday? We'll find out. But Notre Dame's been playing, I think, playoff lacrosse for the last 3 weeks. And they continue the pattern of win one, lose one. Again, haven't put together back-to-back wins since knocking off Maryland and Denver back in March. Can they break that trend? They're coming off a nice win over North Carolina that kept them out of that 4-5 game and got them in this 2-3 contest with the Duke Blue Devils. Brendan Gleeson, he was on fire against Carolina. He had 5 goals in that game. Brian Costabile, 31 goals on the season. He was held to 1 goal against Duke in the first meeting, as was Gleason, where Connor Morin took over for Notre Dame. So I think the Irish really need, they definitely need Costabile and Gleason to step up. And then Duke, we've talked about this in previous weeks. They seem like a new team since they tinkered with their lineup. Brad Smith up in the midfield, and Nekhai Montgomery, who has been in the midfield all season long, missed a couple games due to injury. They've each scored 11 points in their last 3 games, so they have become the 2 go-to guys. But what's important to note here is Turner Upgren, the goaltender, who hasn't had a great season. He's been okay, not great, 52% on the season. In the month of April, he's stopping shots at 57%. So those extra 5 percentage points, that's about a goal and a half to 2 goals less a game that he's giving up. And when you talk about their defense, Cade Van Rapphorst, he's got 15 ground balls in the last 2 games. That's a guy that can play down low. He can play on a wing. He can lead transition. He's doing a great job. And then when you have JT Giles Harris on the other side, that's as good of a duo as it gets in college lacrosse. So this should be another really, really good game. We'll see if the trend holds of the winner of the regular season. Can Duke break that trend and win 2 in a row against Notre Dame in the same season?
And that game you can watch on ESPNU Saturday at 4:30. The last featured game is a big one in the Ivy League. Princeton, 7-6 overall, 2-3 in the Ivy League, will travel to number 9 Cornell, who's 9-4 and 3-2, sits just ahead of them in the standings. This is key for that fourth playoff berth in the Ivy League playoffs. This game will be Saturday at noon.
And you got a better handle of the tiebreaker situation than I do in the Ivy. So Penn's the number one seed. And that tournament's going to be at Columbia University in New York first weekend of May. So what? Penn's number one.
Yale's
number two.
Then
what happens after that?
Yale's number two.
Yale's number two. Okay. All right.
If Princeton needs to beat Cornell by 3 or more goals to get into the Ivy League tournament. And it also depends how Brown does in their game against Dartmouth. So let's just say Brown's going to beat Dartmouth if, you know,
right,
what we have seen all season holds up. Brown beat Princeton 14-10, so they won that game by 4. It's all about goal differential.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought Brown did knock off Princeton. Obviously.
But Brown can beat Dartmouth, and there's a scenario where they don't get in to the tournament, the Ivy League tournament, based on what happens in the Cornell-Princeton game. If Princeton wins by 4, 5, or 6 goals, I think it actually could knock Brown out. Again, that is all clarified. Look at the post. That's on InsideLacrosse.com, our weekend preview post. I'll have the Ivy League tiebreaker scenarios all laid out there for you. But Princeton's mission's pretty clear. They need to beat Cornell by 3 or more goals to make sure that they are in the tournament. Now, if Dartmouth were to beat Brown, Princeton can still get into the tournament by beating Cornell. But Princeton needs the win. They need to beat Cornell. Dix, if I ask you this question, who are the two leading scorers, top scorers on Cornell's roster? Who do you think they are?
Jeff Teat and Clark Peterson.
And that's what I would have thought too, but it's actually Jeff Teat and John Piatelli.
No kidding.
Yeah, okay. Teat has 62 points. Piatelli has 57 points, 40 goals, 17 assists. Peterson has 40 goals, 15 assists. He's at 55 points.
Okay.
What an offense these guys have. They have, you know, you think of Teat and Peterson, but Piatelli's right up there, and this is a prolific offense that Princeton will need to stop on Saturday.
Yeah, Piatelli's a heck of a player, and you mentioned it. Cornell offensively is very, very good. The problem is they don't face off well. And they're getting better goaltending. I think Chase Ireland is the guy after he has been the starter now for a handful of weeks. But it's facing off and defense that are the bugaboos of the Cornell Big Red. So if Princeton can control the faceoff, and they've got some scorers of their own, Michael Sowers in particular, they could put a lot of pressure on this Cornell team. I do expect a high-scoring game in this one, probably in the neighborhood of 13-12, 14-13-ish, if not more. Two offenses that are really, really good, and two defenses that are inconsistent and need to play better in order for either team to win this game.
Yeah, two prolific scorers in junior Jeff Teat of Cornell and Michael Sowers of Princeton. Both of them have a chance to score their 100th career Ivy League goal, and Sowers has a chance to become Princeton's all-time leading scorer, besting the mark that Kevin Lowe set 25 years ago when he scored 247 points. They are tied after Sowers' 3-goal, 7-assist game last week versus Harvard. He's done it in 41 games. It took Kevin Lowe 60 games to do it. Unbelievable, the consistency of Michael Sowers, the scoring ability, and the leadership. I had a chance to talk to him as he approaches a record-breaking opportunity. And here's what Michael Sowers had to say about that. We're joined by Princeton's prolific junior attackman, Michael Sowers. Michael, welcome into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, Michael, since you've arrived on campus as a freshman, you've been an impact player. Now in your third year, how has your game grown over your time at Princeton?
You know, I felt like as a result of just kind of our coaching staff and the guys surrounding. I mean, my job has been super easy. And from day one, kind of, I just have to go out there and play within my role. And like I said, thanks to our scheme and the guys around, I mean, the rest kind of takes care of itself. So I'm definitely very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in.
Hey, one of the things that's been so impressive about you has been your consistency. Scored a school record 82 points as a freshman, 83 last year to break your own record, and then right now you're sitting on 82 with one game left in the regular season. Obviously, it's a team game. So what's been the key to the Princeton offense and offensive success as it relates to you and the rest of your team?
I think, to be honest, I mean, I think that it definitely boils down to our system. I think that we definitely have one of the more underrated offensive systems in the country, and that's a credit to Coach March. I mean, from day one, it's kind of been, you know, we've been very confident in it, and he really does put us in spots to succeed. And for me, you know, that's been huge because, I mean, I've been very comfortable in the system since the day I stepped on campus, and that's really helped me grow as a player.
In February and March of this year, you guys lost some heartbreakers. You lost to Virginia and OT, Hopkins and Rutgers, all by a total of 4 goals. But in April, you guys have reeled off 4 in a row. Now you sit at 7-6. What's the mindset of the team early on as you had a rocky start? And then how's that mood changed in the locker room now?
You know, I think it was definitely difficult. You know, naturally, when you're losing and you're working hard, it's tough. But I think that all the credit goes to the seniors for kind of that switch. From, you know, the mood, the energy at practice never wavered. Even being down in that hole, I think we were 2-5. You know, the mood, the energy never wavered. And it started with those guys and our senior leadership. So I think that they were a huge part of that and a big reason for kind of that swing.
So as we turn our attention to this week, your mission is clearly right in front of you. To secure a spot in the postseason tournament, you need to beat Cornell, and probably by 3 or more goals due to the Ivy League tiebreakers. What will be the key for your team to not only beat Cornell, but to unleash that offensive power and put up some goals?
You know, I think that for us, it's just kind of, you know, sticking to our system, sticking to what we're comfortable in. You know, we know that Cornell is a really good team. They're really well coached. They have some awesome players. But for us, like every week, it's just about us and our team. And our effort coming out on Saturday.
On the other end of the field, Cornell has its own offensive firepower, including another prolific scoring junior, much like yourself and Jeff Teat, who also can score his 100th goal this Saturday. What's your defensive game plan? How do you guys try to slow down Teat, Peterson, and the Big Red?
You know, those guys are definitely awesome. They're fun to watch, but you know, similar to the offensive end, I think that for our defense, it's just going to be about our max effort and trusting in our system and having trust in Coach Hirsch. And so we're definitely confident on that end.
On that end of the field, you also have two brothers who get a lot of playing time for you at close defense, the Roberts brothers. But there's more to them than just two brothers starting, which I don't know if there's another situation like that in Division I lacrosse where two guys are on the same unit like that. But they're also, they grew up in Ireland and by way of California made it to Princeton. Tell me about those two guys.
Yeah, they're great guys. And I definitely think that situation is very unique. But we're fortunate to have those guys on the roster. I mean, on and off the field, I mean, they're great guys. Aaron's in his 5th year, so he's been like a tremendous leader for us. And Cajal is just an awesome athlete and an awesome guy. So we're definitely very fortunate to have those two guys down on that end.
All right, I have to ask you about this, and you may not want to talk about personal stuff, but it's important. It's likely that you'll break the Princeton school scoring record this week that's been held for 25 years by Princeton great and Hall of Famer Kevin Lowe. What's that mean to you, to be breaking a record and setting a new standard for a program that has such a rich history?
You know, it's really an honor. I think that to even be mentioned in the same sentence as those guys is an unbelievable honor. So, you know, to me, those no matter what, those will always be the guys to look up to. I mean, the stuff that they did, you know, winning national championships, setting new precedents, I think that, you know, that stuff will never be matched. So like I said, I mean, to just be mentioned in the same sentence with those guys is truly an honor.
It took Kevin Lowe 60 games to score his 247 points. You've only played 41 games. And in between, there's been some other great players that have worn the Tiger uniform, like Ryan Boyle, Jesse Hubbard, Tom Schreiber, John Hess. No doubt you're rewriting the Princeton record book. What's the Princeton brotherhood been like to you as you approach this record? Have any of those guys been in touch with you at all?
Absolutely. I think that the Princeton brotherhood is very unique, and I think that it's definitely a special bond amongst the current players and some of the alums. So I've been very fortunate to get to know some of those guys, and they've been awesome.
So you're from Philly, you grew up in Dresher, which is sort of on the north side of Philadelphia, and in the last 15 years, the reputation of Philadelphia as a hotbed for producing great college talent is indisputable. And it's really grown by leaps and bounds. Some regions have a stereotype or a reputation. What would you say is the reputation of Philly area players?
I think it starts with Coach Christmas at the Dukes Lacrosse Club, but just that idea of being Philly tough. I think that, guys that come out of Philadelphia notoriously, they play hard, they're hard workers, and I think that hard work is just a direct result of the competition early on. You know, when you have so many good players at a young age, kind of the only way to sort of separate yourself is through hard work and continuously getting better. So I think that when people think Philly lacrosse, I think that with the Philly tough.
Got it. All right, I'm going to ask you a couple of rapid-fire questions, wrap this thing up. You ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
What players did you emulate as a kid?
Mikey Powell, Joey Sankey, Jordan Wolf.
Who's got the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia?
Steve Springs.
MLL or PLL?
I guess PLL.
What's your favorite video game?
I would say the old NCAA footballs for sure.
Oh, nice choice. Okay, we talk about food a lot on this podcast. People coming to Class of 1952 Stadium for a game, where should they go for a pregame or postgame meal?
Definitely Hoagie Haven.
Hoagie Haven, all right. And then lastly, what's the best thing about Princeton University?
The best thing, I think, is just... with the program, I mean, the unique history and tradition. I think that a lot of programs and colleges across are very proud of their history. I think that's unique here, and I think that the guys on the team have a great appreciation for, the history. And then the other thing I'd say is just the guys on the team. I think that, it's just a unique group and truly a brotherhood.
Hey, Michael, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck this Saturday against Cornell.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's really amazing what that kid has accomplished in such a short time, 3 seasons, all the history at Princeton, all the great players that have worn the Tiger uniform, and he's got a chance to be the leading scorer in his junior year. That's remarkable.
It is. Fun player to watch. Great feat. Tremendous change of direction. Probably him and Grant Amont own the best COD in the game. One of the negative things I will throw up, though, Michael Sowers, for all the points, for all the records, for all the this and the that, hasn't made the NCAA tournament since he's been a member of the Princeton Tigers. So I'm sure that's a goal of his. And you kind of equate that with Tom Schreiber, tremendous midfielder for Princeton and just not much of an NCAA tournament resume. So, if you're Princeton, you've got the alpha male, you've got that big piece. The pieces around Michael Sowers need to come together, particularly on Saturday against the Big Red, in order for to get the Tigers that much-needed win.
Well, they'll certainly have their chance. That game will be Saturday at noon. Be sure to check that one out. Dix, it's time for our marquee game of the week. The best rivalry in all of college lacrosse, Johns Hopkins. Travel to College Park to take on the number 2 Maryland Terrapins Saturday night on BTN.
So I believe this is the 118th meeting all time between Hopkins and Maryland. Since they've joined the Big Ten, they've met once in the Big Ten tournament. That was last season. Hopkins knocking off the Terps to win the Big Ten tournament title, get the AQ in the NCAA tournament. That's the first time over the last 5 meetings that Hopkins has beaten Maryland. The Terps gotten the better of them lately in this rivalry. And this game's no exception. A lot on the line here. Winner gets second place in the Big Ten tournament. So Hopkins right now at 2-2, Maryland's at 3-1. Blue Jays win, they go number 2. Maryland wins, they go number 2. But altogether, this, we might be seeing this same matchup a week from this Saturday in the Big Ten tournament, if things hold the way that they that people think that they will, meaning Rutgers doesn't beat Penn State. Still, you stay away from Penn State if you can go ahead and get this win and stay 2-3. Nobody wants to play the Nittany Lions at this stage. But for these two teams coming in different directions, Maryland winners over Rutgers, and then the overtime victory against Ohio State a week ago. Hopkins has lost 2 games in a row. We talked last week about the gut-wrenching loss to Ohio State where they lost a 6-goal halftime lead. And then they were just really handled last Sunday up in Happy Valley on Easter Sunday, 20-9. So I'd like to say throw the record books out the window for this one, and I still think that is applicable. But the way these two teams are trending, Hopkins is going to have to play a great game to beat the University of Maryland. And Maryland's going to have to play very, very well to beat Hopkins. But if you just look at the big picture and how these teams have performed the last couple of weeks, you've got to give the advantage to Maryland. It's going to be Maryland Day down at College Park. Spring football games at noon. Hopkins and Maryland women, 4:30. Shan Stanwyck and I will have that call on Big Ten Network. And then 7:30 is the main course. Hopkins, Maryland men, Joe B. and I will have that call. Can't wait. Will be intense. Will be physical. Can Hopkins prevent Maryland from going on a run? Hopkins is giving up so many crippling scoring runs this season, 5 or 6 games. And for Maryland, is it a situation where can they get off to a good start? They were slow starting against Penn State. They were slow starting against Michigan. They've got off. They were slow starting against Rutgers. I thought they got off to a good start last weekend in Ohio State. Can they get off to another quick start?
And again, this game is pivotal for the Blue Jays. They get a win. It gives them a little breathing room over the 500 mark for a potential at-large consideration for the NCAA tournament. Plus, as you mentioned, seeding in the Big Ten tournament, as well as bragging rights for the Crab Trophy that symbolizes this rivalry.
The Crab Trophy, one of the architects of that, John Bolster, out in the Baltimore area. But you did that's a great point that you make, because I am so entrenched in these standings and the tiebreakers, et cetera. You're right. Hopkins right now 6-6. They lose. It's AQ or bust. But like you said, if they can beat Maryland, they go to 7-6. You're in the Big Ten tournament. You could still lose a game in the Big Ten tournament. You're still in play for the NCAA tournament consideration. So great point you make. Hopkins wins, gives them a little bit more wiggle room when it comes to that mathematical record of staying above or at 500.
Also gives them a huge RPI win over a top 5 team as well to also help their at-large consideration.
Big time.
Big time game, as always. I can't wait for this game. And let's hope that it's a well-played game. And, of course, the Blue Jays come out on top.
What are your plans? Where are you going to watch it? You got a watching party going on in First League? Or is it going to be a quiet night at the Flynn household? Or are we going to Looney's potentially for au pair night, you know, to mix it up a little bit and have some real live action? What's going on?
Well, I was planning on watching at home and having some people over to watch it, but while we were talking about it, I started dreaming of being in College Park on Saturday night, maybe bringing my kids and being treated to a great night of college lacrosse in person.
Come on out.
I'm thinking about it. I'm really thinking about it.
You know what you'll do? You're gonna think that way until about 5:30 on Saturday afternoon. Then you're gonna be like, you know what? I gotta get in the car. I gotta get the kids in the car. I gotta fight traffic. I gotta find parking. You're gonna help our numbers on Big Ten Network. I have a feeling.
Either way, I can't lose. It's gonna be a great game, and I will be watching, whether in person or listening to you and Joe B in my living room. But I can't wait.
No doubt.
All right, Tix, it's time for the give and go.
What do you got?
TV sitcoms. A couple of shows that I really enjoy. There aren't a whole lot of great TV sitcoms, especially on network TV anymore. But I think this is the last season of Modern Family and the last season of a great show called Veep on HBO. Love it, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's just hilariously funny. But I started
thinking, I've never watched Veep, but Modern Family, this is it for Modern Family? It's going away?
Yes, their 10th and final season.
Okay, all right.
So I started thinking, like, what are the best TV sitcoms of all time? Or at least my favorites. And I had a lot to consider. There's a lot of considerations. So I'll give you some of the, you know, popular ones that people would normally say. Modern Family, Friends, The Big Bang Theory. That's a show I've never watched. Simpsons.
Never. No, I've never watched a minute of that.
Arrested
Development. And I never watched any, and I've never seen 2 1/2 Men, and yeah. I've never watched an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond.
I feel there's just certain shows. Anything that was on CBS, I never watched. And I think all of those shows were on CBS for some reason. The Simpsons, Arrested Development, Veep, Family Guy, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Blackish, Cosby Show, 30 Rock, The Office, Cheers, Parks and Recreation, and of course Seinfeld. Those are some of the ones that I was considering. But if I had to rank them, my favorites, and I'll go in order.
I was going to say, you just named like 30.
I wanted to throw some out there because I surprise you with the give and go each week. I want to make sure you had a couple thoughts in your head so that you can do your.
I appreciate that. I can think on my feet. I see what you're doing. I got no problem with that. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm gonna go 3-1. I'm gonna start with The Simpsons. Number 3. That show was so groundbreaking and so funny and so the ability to just predict things, satire, commentary, and just good laughs. Can't beat The Simpsons. Number 2.
Longest running show in the history of network television, correct?
I think you're right. It's got to be. It's been on forever.
No, I think it is. And I mean, how many Simpsons reference? I mean, Smithers and Mr. Burns.
So many.
And Krusty the Clown, and Kent Brockmeyer. doing the school videos. Hi, I'm Kent Brockmeyer. You might remember me from such infomercials as "Here Comes the Metric System" and "Lead Paint, Deadly but Tasty but Deadly." Like those are classics.
Yeah, just a great show. Great show. I don't really watch it anymore though. It's still on, still running.
Me neither.
I just don't watch it. But there was a time when I wouldn't miss an episode and watch the reruns every night. Now a show that took its place probably around the same time, The Office. That's my number 2. Absolutely love that show. I love the British version with Ricky Gervais, and I love the American version, of course, with Michael Scott, played by Steve Carell. Awesome, hilarious show. So good. So many references, and very popular in the Inside Lacrosse headquarters, even today.
I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true, but somebody said The Office is going to disappear from Netflix. So I think there's a lot of people really upset that because they get their fix to this day, or maybe they're new fans of The Office that watch it via Netflix. So that might be something to keep your eye out for.
Yeah. Well, I've seen every episode, and I'm pretty sure it's on like TBS or Fox, like every night, a couple episodes. So you'll be able to find it. And then I'll say my number one show.
So what you're saying is it's their problem if it goes away from Netflix.
It's their problem, not mine.
Understood.
It'll just go to another streaming service. It'll go to Hulu or somebody else will pick it up. Number one all time is Seinfeld.
Gotta be.
No better show ever. The references, the scenarios, the situations, the characters, the way it imitated life. There's nothing better than Seinfeld. That's my
list. Was sitting at a business luncheon yesterday, and someone said Serenity Now. And that's a Seinfeld reference.
There you go. I had one just recently.
Serenity someone, Now.
We're yeah. talking about like a reservation or something, and how someone put a reservation in and then it didn't work. And I said, the most important part of the reservation is holding the reservation. Anyone can take a reservation. Take. It's holding the reservation that's so important. So what's your rank?
Well, the jerk store called. I've named my fantasy football team Serenity Now. We've been jerk store a couple times. Vegetable lasagna is another popular one. Vandalay Industries is always good.
And you want to be my latex salesman. Say Vandalay.
I don't think Vandalay. So. Shrinkage is another good one. But you're right. Just endless references and the influence that it's had on pop culture is significant. So right when you said sitcoms, current sitcoms that I enjoy, I think I've referenced this. I love The Goldbergs and I love Schooled. So those are two shows set in the 80s is The Goldbergs, and then the 90s is Schooled. So I just love the references and the music, and, you know, it kind of takes you back to growing up in the 80s. And then in the 90s, I was in college. So good stuff there. Another show that I love, I believe it's on IFC. It's Brockmire. Have you ever watched Brockmire with Hank Azaria?
No, but I know of this show. I've never seen it, though.
Oh, it's incredible. And it is funny, cringy, in the same way that Eastbound and Down was funny but very cringeworthy. So, and the good thing about Brockmire is the episodes are only about 24, 25 minutes long. So, like, I didn't even know the third season had started at Brockmire until this past weekend. Just went on demand and whipped through those three episodes in, you know, right around an hour's time. So, Brockmire's excellent. But if you want to go all time, I love Happy Days. Love the show Happy Days. To this day, I'm a huge Henry Winkler fan. Fonz is a cool dude, but I just loved Happy Days, probably because my parents enjoyed it, and it reminded them of when they grew up, you know, the drive-ins mm-hmm. and the malt shops and all that kind of stuff. And that's another, you know, pop culture phenomenon, the Jump the Shark. Pinky Tuscadero, and then the Fonz were dating, and Fonzie jumped the shark in the parking lot of Arnold's. Everything seemed to happen in Arnold's parking lot for whatever reason. Then I remember the like Who's the Boss? Remember Who's the Boss with Tony Danza?
Yeah, of course. Melissa
like
Milano.
For whatever reason. Melissa Milano, uh-huh. much younger back then, but still very attractive. And I guess the ball was not only like the setup and the jokes were okay, but it was always, are Angela and Tony ever going to get together kind of thing. And I guess eventually they did, and that's what ultimately killed the show was when the two got together, because that mystery and intrigue was gone. But for me, it's going, I don't know if you would consider Entourage a sitcom or not, but Entourage is another one that I really enjoyed watching on HBO back when that mm-hmm. had its run. And you know, my wife and I recently watched Aquaman, and I'm like, where's Vinny Chase? I thought Vinny Chase was Aquaman. But Entourage was made for me by Jeremy Piven's character, Ari Gold. He was just hysterical.
He steals every scene that he's in.
He was great. Great. But when you look back on sitcoms, the ones that I remember, cause you'd watch them after school or early evening, were the groundbreaking shows like Good Times and the Jeffersons,
All in the
Different
Family.
Strokes was another one. I never really watched All in the Family. It was a little bit, I think that was a few years before, because I think the Jeffersons were a spinoff of All in the Family, just in a different dynamic, a white family versus a black family. But I really, like, those are the shows that I love. And one of my all-time favorites as well, I know I'm not ranking them, Sanford and Son is just one of the best shows ever.
Oh,
you know, your big dummy. But I'm going to mix my champagne and ripple, and I'm going to call Shampipple. So Fred Sanford, just an incredible actor and or character by Red Fox. And then Lamont, you know, the big dummy. It introduced you to characters like Julio and Rallo and Aunt Esther and stuff like that. And, you know, you watch that show now on TV Land or any of the other outlets that show old school television. I mean, it's so, you realize how old you are, first of all, but how simple it was, just how simple it was. And it was just, it was based on the jokes and the physical comedy as well. So those are some of my all-time favorite sitcoms right there.
Well, that's a great list, Dix. Great list. Lots of entertainment there.
All right. Just showed my age as well, but
yeah,
hey,
dude,
what
came
are you going
to
do?
This. Every college student listening to this is like, I have no idea what that guy's talking about.
Well, go back and, you know, you got YouTube. You can grab an old episode. And
that's true. All right. If you like what you heard, do us a favor and smash that subscribe button. Leave a rating. Share it with a friend. You can hit us up on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse and at @D_Fly, FLY. Or you can send me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcast here at Inside Lacrosse. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great weekend and enjoy the games.